Good morning, church. It's good to see you all. Good to be here. Always good to be here. Sundays have become just a great time, not just to gather as a church, but to see friends and to talk about the week. And it's good to get to experience life with so many of you outside of the doors of this building. And it has been certainly a busy week. We've got a lot going on. Really want to encourage you, if you have the opportunity, to come and participate this afternoon in the Upward Carnival, the end-of-the-year celebration for our Upward teams. And you can come, you can be a part of the ceremony and see us honor those coaches and kids, and also to come over to the carnival. You can work one of the games and help. I'm sure they could always use more adult supervision with that. So really would encourage you to do that. If you're not going to do that, I have been reminded to tell you this is the final production today, final performance of Good Man Charlie Brown. And if you have not seen that, you should still come help with the Upward celebration. But after that, go see Good Man Charlie Brown. Go see Doug and Jonathan Tucker. Not my son Jonathan, but Jonathan Tucker. Today is buy one, get one free. Wow. So if you buy Douglas Yurchik, they throw Jonathan Tucker in for free. That's good. And my wife has an announcement. April the 6th is Singerama at Lipscomb University. If you have not seen that, it's a song and show production put on by the students there. Tickets are $20. Rebecca's curious to see if there's any interest in getting a group to go together. If you would like to go, and it is for people of all ages, you can contact her. Heather, do you have anything? This whole front pew over here was giving me announcements. Okay. I think that takes care of all the announcements I have for this morning. So, I know, and we have talked about this, we talked about it some last week, but we're continuing a little series on the family, and I know that there are a lot of people both in here and out there, who are distressed about the state of the family in our society and about society in general. And I've noticed that especially among, and maybe this is just because of who I'm friends with on social media, I've noticed that those among my generation and older, there are a lot of theories about what exactly has led us to this point. Have you noticed this? Like what has gone wrong to get us to where we are? And some people will say, well, point out, it's the bullying that's going on in schools. And then other people say, no, it's because we're making kids too sensitive and they need to stand up for themselves. And other people say, well, it's when we took God out of schools, as if we get to decide where God goes. Like the God who created the very atoms that make up our schools, we get to tell him, no, you can't come in here. No, we don't get to do that with God. And so, but one of the most popular theories that's out there, and by the way, that's really bad theology. Don't say to anyone that God is not in our schools. Don't do that. We don't get to tell God where he can and cannot go, and we are not in charge of the universe. God is. And there are plenty of Christians who are in those schools who pray and read their Bibles in those schools every day. So God is in our schools. So that's bad theology. Don't do that. But that's not the theory I want to talk about this morning. The theory I want to talk about this morning, it's one of the most popular ones, is what's gone wrong with our society, it's how we discipline our kids. Have you heard this one? Raise your hand if you've heard that. That what's gone wrong is how we discipline our kids. And so if you've spent any time at all on social media, you've probably in the last few weeks seen memes like this, or maybe some that look like these. Maybe you've seen this one. There are a multitude of other ones. These are just a couple of my least favorite. And so when I was a kid, my parents did not discipline me with a rod. They used a belt, and so much better. That belt was my nemesis. It was my Uncle David's belt, and I know that because it was one of those belts that had the name on it. You know what I'm talking about? We used to, like, the leather work we used to do that would have your name on the back of the belt, which was great if you were into child abduction. So you should call out this kid's name. It's right there. And so it was my Uncle David's belt, but it was my Uncle David's much older, and this belt was real worn and flimsy and perfectly shaped for spanking. And so I hated that belt, and so much so that on rare occasions, when we knew that spankings were coming, my brother and I would climb up on top of the refrigerator where the belt was stored and get it down and hide it from my parents. We did that with the belt, and now it never, ever worked. They would just say, "Where's the belt? We don't know where that one is. I can find another one." Because if that, if that belt wasn't handy, there were plenty of others. That was the spanking belt, but any belt would do. In fact, one time that strategy sort of backfired on me. The belt was missing. No idea what happened to it there. And so my mom grabbed my belt, which was my Western belt, and it was kind of big and thick, and I had a buckle on it, and it had a picture of a guy riding a bull on the front, because that's the kind of kid I was. And on the fact, the back of it had a poem that said, "I'm a lover and a fighter. I'm a crazy wild bull rider." It was my belt buckle, that belt. And so as she is swinging said belt toward me, somehow this buckle, which was a little bit big for her hand, slipped out of her hand and came up and hit me upside the head. My mom says I tell that story to document if I ever want to file charges against her, and it sounds awful, but in fact, I was pretty happy about it because I only got one lick. I mean, that was like, I practically got out of a spanking. I didn't care that I got hit upside the head with a belt buckle. I just got out of a spanking. Now, to many in today's culture, and maybe even some of you, I don't know, but you might find this form of discipline objectionable. And maybe it's not like the house you were raised in, or it's not like the house you raised your kids. Some people would even label it as abusive. And in my family context, I would disagree that I don't think it was abusive. But given the amount of abuse against children that goes on, I understand that rationale. I understand you may have grown up in an abusive home in which spankings were used as a tool of abuse. And so thus, you may think that way about them. So that's, on the one hand, we know that discipline can be carried too far. And we know that spankings and beatings and whippings, whatever you want to call them, we know that can be carried too far. On the flip side, there are many kids who grow up without any discipline at all. And you may see them running around the grocery store or Walmart or terrorizing the animals at PetSmart. And you, like me, may think to yourself, that kid needs a spanking. Right? You may see those kids and they're just completely wild. And you think, why doesn't somebody, namely the parent, spank that kid? Now, when we say that or when we think that, we probably don't say it out loud. Do we say we want to see this kid harmed? Absolutely not. And if we saw behavior that looked like it was harming the child, and which we believe to be abusive, likely we would be the first ones to step in and intervene or maybe call the police, whatever it took to stop the abuse, right? What we really want is not for this child to be abused. What we want is for the parents of this wild child to enact some discipline, right? That's what we say and see. We want them to enact some discipline because their current discipline has not gone far enough. And at this point, let me interject. When we talk about discipline, sometimes that is used synonymously with spankings and whippings or whatever you call them. But discipline actually can refer to many effective forms. It can have a lot of different ways. There's one method that's kind of we're talking about here this morning, but really I want you to broaden this out. You as a parent, if you are a parent, have to choose to enact the discipline that would probably be best tailored to your child. I just have two kids, and the way that I've had to raise my two kids, discipline has varied because what works with one may not work with the other, or what's more effective with one may not be more effective with the other. So the emphasis here is not on spankings this morning, not on literally the rod, But the emphasis is on the willingness and on choosing to discipline in the first place. Choosing to discipline at all, whatever form that may take. Just affection, just loving your kids is not enough. If you are a kid, you need to know this morning, your parents love you. And parents, I'm telling your kids, I'm giving them this heads up, that you love them. But love is just on its own not enough. Love has to also discipline. So kids, if your parents discipline and you think it's because they hate you, it's actually because they love you. Good Christians or even good human beings cannot be produced in homes where the children have learned to respect their parents. And homes where this is absent, where discipline is absent, produces insecurity and dependence. And it's a world of headache that's coming down the road. It has to be enacted. So, just so we're on the same page here, we're talking about discipline. What we mean is instructing where the boundaries of acceptable behavior lie, and then enforcing them within a framework of love and affection. That's our definition of discipline this morning, right? It's saying this is the line, this is what you can and cannot do, and then enforcing this line in the boundaries or in the framework of love and affection. Children have to learn to follow patterns that produce satisfactory results. So good discipline includes both positive reinforcement, good job on staying in the boundaries, and includes negative reinforcement. Negative reinforcement, bad job on getting out of the boundaries, right? This behavior needs to be eliminated. This behavior needs to be magnified. We have to do both. So a loving parent will inflict temporary discomfort on their children in order to spare them the long-range discomfort of an undisciplined life. That's what we're talking about this morning. So how are we supposed to do this? As parents, and many of you out there are parents, some of you have kids that are grown, some of you have kids that are still small, but how are we and how did we or how should we do this? How can we go about correcting our children without going too far or without going far enough, right? Without being either too hard or too soft? How do we discipline our children the same way that God disciplines us? That's the real question this morning. So we're going to look at three things that God gives us. Three things. That was a five. The three things that God gives us that we need to give our children. These are necessary elements for all discipline. This is how God disciplines us, and this is how we, in turn, ought to discipline our children. So the first thing that we have to give is real love. Unless we begin with a foundation of real love, any correction we give, even with the best of intentions, will not be received. Did anybody see the story recently about a little boy in line at the grocery store, and he had asked his dad for something, and his dad said no, and then he asked again, and the stranger in line behind them took it upon himself to grab this toddler by the arm and then spank him for asking a second time. Did anybody see that story? Real story. Now, you can argue that the child needed correcting. I could go that far. But be administered outside of the framework of love, does this child receive that as discipline or just being hit by a stranger? Right? So discipline has to be given in the context of love. God knows this very well because he's the one who made us this way. And so he acts accordingly. This is what he says in Hebrews chapter 12. My child, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord or lose heart when you are punished by him. For the Lord disciplines those whom he loves and chastises every child whom he accepts. Real discipline must begin with real love. And that only makes sense, right? Until you really believe that the person exercising authority over you, until you really believe that they have your best interest at heart, you are only going to follow them as far as you're forced to follow them. You will never choose willingly to follow someone that you don't believe loves you. Even that, you know, the famous verse, or maybe you think of it as an infamous verse that we kind of quoted for our sermon title, Proverbs 13:24. Those who spare the rod hate their children, but those who love them are diligent to discipline them. It is not about hitting your kids every time you get mad at them or whenever they get in your way. That is not what this is about at all. It's about loving them enough to diligently correct them. So let's just use an imaginary scenario here. Imagine that a child is being defiant. Maybe he's being disrespectful or disobedient or untruthful. You get the idea. He's doing something he ought not to do. And so people standing around see this behavior, and they may gently nudge the father or the mother to discipline this child. And so the parents warn the child to be better, and then they send them all off. And then this procedure is repeated over and over. Sometimes they may even speak harshly or even threaten, but they never enforce the guidelines, never reinforce the boundaries. So what does this child learn? They learn that they can do whatever they want, and their parents may not like it, but they won't do anything to stop it. And that's a bad enough thing. But here's the worst thing, is they believe that is the way that the world now works. That you can do anything, and it's not that big a deal, right? It has to be reinforced. By threatening and actually failing to follow through, the parents have exacerbated the problem, made the problem worse. They've taught this child that nothing he does is serious enough to warrant consequences. So the parents think they're being loving because they're not doing anything to the child that they wouldn't want done to them. But real love has to be stronger than that. Throughout Scripture, we see God correcting and chastising and even sometimes punishing his people. Was it because God didn't love them? Absolutely not. God says, in fact, if I didn't love you, why would I even bother? I only correct people I love. That's the only people I discipline at all is the people I love. So that's the first thing that we need to give is real love. Second thing we need to give is real boundaries. Now, frequently we may hear or even say, I'm not going to force my views on my children. You know, I believe in letting them decide for themselves. And I understand that because I sort of go down that path. Again, it's completely understandable since we want our children to reap the rewards of making right choices for themselves. I want my kids to choose the right thing, and then when they choose the right thing, to get that positive reinforcement. But children aren't necessarily the best judges of what is good for them in the long run, right? They don't have the ability to see down the road. So if younger kids were allowed to make their own choices, they might not ever go to the dentist. Or get a shot, or take a bath, or eat their veggies, or even attend school, or grow up to serve others, right? We need to set boundaries and expectations for our children. Proverbs 29:15 says, a rod and a reprimand impart wisdom, but a child left undisciplined disgraces its mother. Ultimately, of course, our kids are going to grow up to be adults. Real adults, making all their own decisions. Until that day, it's our job, the parents' job. We have several things. We need to keep them safe. We need to keep them housed and clothed and fed and all that. And we also have to teach them how to grow up to be a competent adult, able to function in the world. And most importantly, as Christian parents, our job is to teach them what it means to walk with God. In our society, this period of instruction that we've been given lasts legally and often typically until around the age of 18. Now, that's the point at which society recognizes them as an adult. Unofficially, of course, it lasts much longer than that. I'm almost 30 years old now, and I still go to my parents for instruction and still say, look, my dad knows still more than I do. all these years later, the only thing I am an expert in is apparently computer problems. So that is what I get called for. Everything else, I go to my parents for wisdom and instruction. So during this time in life as a parent that I have my kids, while I have the opportunity, it's my job to impart wisdom so that they'll be equipped to make those decisions later. So if my 8-year-old says, I don't want to go to church, I don't want to go to school, I don't want to do whatever it may be, I don't grant them the ability to make those decisions because ultimately I know what's best for them. So I'm ingraining in them good habits, and later on in life, when they have this fully functioned part of the brain that they will develop in their late teens and early 20s, they get to make those decisions. But until that point, it's our job to teach them. So one day my son may grow up to throw away his toothbrush and never brush his teeth again. He may do that. Now, when he was much younger, I had to make him brush his teeth. I don't have to do that anymore. I had to, like, make him do personal hygiene like most little boys in the hopes that one day he would grow up to form those beneficial habits. And he has. He's sort of developed those now that he's grown into a teenager. We quote often the scripture, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Does that mean that our children will never do anything that we don't want them to do? Well, certainly not. But by setting appropriate boundaries now, we have increased that likelihood greatly. We've helped them to develop healthy living habits. So the third and final thing that we need to give our kids is a real example. And this is where things get real for us parents. Parents have an incredible influence on their children. You do. Every one of you. Whether you are in your 20s or in your 80s or beyond, you have an incredible influence on your children. Most likely, your children live by the standards that you live by. Most of the time, that's the way it works out. During one period in Israel's history, the kingdom was divided. We had the northern kingdom of Israel, the southern kingdom of Judah. And Nadab, the king of Jeroboam, was the king of the north. He was the king of Israel. And Asa, the son of Jehoshaphat, was the king of Judah in the south. So we've got those two kings, and we're told that each one of those kings walked in the ways of his father, leading, ruling, doing what his father had done. Both kings did that. For Asa in the south, that meant he was a righteous king, and the land profited greatly by his leadership. But for Nadab in the north, that meant that he was a wicked king, because that's what his father did. He's the one who helped bring about the eventual destruction of Israel. So the implication of those stories is clear. But you probably already knew it anyway. Kids are likely to follow in their parents' footsteps. For me, this explains the fact that I went to college and got an accounting degree. Why? My dad's a banker. He seemed to like that job, and people seemed to like him in that job. It also explains my deep commitment to the church. Right, and to my family, because that's what my parents did. I sort of am doing what my parents did a lot of the time. It also means I picked up some probably bad habits along the way, like my tendency to overeat once in a great moon a day. And kids tend to follow in their parents' footsteps. So give them something worth following. Now, this isn't to say that we won't make mistakes. You and I as parents are going to make mistakes. On occasion, my kids have called me out on my mistakes, and I've had to admit that they were right. And that's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's true. So we're going to make mistakes, but we're going to continue striving to lead by example. And this one's critical, because even with all the loving correction in the world, if we are asking our children to do something that we ourselves are unwilling to do, they may follow our rules while they're at home, but they're almost certainly going to follow our practice once they're gone. Does that make sense? If you are asking your kids to do something now that you are not doing, they will do it if you force them to. But when they are grown up, they will act like a grown-up, and you are the grown-up they will act like. So, in study after study, we learned that the spirituality of kids is highly unlikely, this is the way phrase they use, to exceed the spirituality of their parents. It happens on rare occasion, but their spirituality is not likely to exceed your spirituality. So, if the sum total of your relationship with God is coming to church on Sunday mornings, that likely will be the highest spirituality they will achieve. They will show up to church on Sunday mornings. That will be the extent of their spirituality. And we will have effectively left them spiritually crippled in missing out on the joy and the fullness of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. This morning for you, the good news is, I don't know what kind of family you were raised in, the spirituality of your parents, but God has offered you, God has made for you a way forward. Maybe you have not been the mother or the father that God has designed and asked for you to be. Or maybe you have not been the child that your parents hoped you would be in keeping up the spirituality that they've tried to impart to you. The great thing about our Heavenly Father is that He offers redemption for both, for fallen parents and wayward children alike. And He calls us back into relationship with Him so that we can continue to grow and mature in love and faithfulness. And if we can help you with your walk with God this morning, we want to do that. If there's anything at all, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?